Hello.
Hello. Okay, we're on.
Okay, great. Hi, everybody.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for being here today. This is Laura Shaw here and Catherine Jeffries. And we are joining with you for the Conscious Parenting webinar, which we're so sorry, but we had major technical difficulties and couldn't get it to work. So we thought we would go ahead and record a conversation anyway and post that for you. So our hope is that we can give you some tools today that you can start using in your parenting challenges, which we can more than relate to. So thank you so much for joining with us, and we're so sorry about the change of plans here. And yeah, I just wanted to also take a moment before I introduce our guest, Catherine. I just want to say I'm so happy to have this time and space with other people, to be interacting with other people who have the same desire to move through this crazy parenting journey with more awareness and clear seeing. This is such a desire that I honor, and I'm in here with you. I'm on the path with you. So thank you for being with us. And and Catherine Jeffries, thank you for joining us today. Dr. Catherine Jeffries has been a long time friend of mine, and she is an author of Awake: Education for Enlightenment, which is an amazing book. And she's also a certified facilitator for the work of Byron Katie. And she's a mother, a single mother with a 13-year-old. And Kath, I just know that the combination of your warmth and your insight and your wisdom, and you've just spent so much time and energy on developing and focusing on your own self-understanding through your PhD and through your life. So I'm very grateful to have you with us today. So thank you and welcome.
Oh, well, that's so nice. And you're so welcome. I'm really, really happy to do this.
Great. So, yeah, so we're coming together today to talk about parenting and also drawing on your wisdom and experience of the work of Byron Katie. And I'm just wondering, Catherine, if you could just tell us a little bit about how did you come to the work and what's it all about, and how have you been able to use it in a parenting context for yourself personally?
Yeah, okay, Laura. So I'll just start answering, and if I'm, not catching all those parts, please just feel free to interrupt me and, ask again. So how I came to the work, and maybe I'll just kind of include briefly what it is there too. So, I've been on my own as a parent since Bella was 12 months old. And so the first year of her life, she had a lot of health problems. And, I'm happy to go into details, but just with time, I won't do that now. But it just brought up an incredible amount of fear in me, just a massive amount of anxiety. Really kind of got worse also when I was on my own with her. So really just to sum it up, in those years, I'd always sort of been what maybe people would call a seeker, from as long as I can remember, and, was drawn to different, what mostly I think would be called self-help genre books. In my 20s, I had Bella when I was 29, but it really took on this whole new meaning when I became a mom, and she, to my mind, almost died many times, and, and I already didn't know what I was doing as a mother, and so there's this incredible amount of fear. And I'd, you know, I had a bit of therapy before I had Bella, and after that, you know, I was involved in psychotherapy for like once a week for several years when Bella was young. Yeah, so again, to just try to make it a bit shorter, nothing worked. You know, nothing, and when I say worked, I mean that I was really in a lot of suffering, like emotional, mental suffering, and I was really struggling to, with my life, like with my daily moment-to-moment living of my life, and nothing was helping. Like the psychotherapy wasn't helping, and the books I was reading wasn't helping. And to be honest, I don't remember how the name Byron Katie, you know, came to me, my attention, or the work. What I can tell you is that in 2009, Byron Katie came to Toronto to do a weekend workshop. So you could either go just for the Friday night or the whole weekend. And I went for the whole weekend. And it was one of those moments where, you know, it was just like, okay, here is something. And what I want to say briefly about the work was, you know, that I discovered during that weekend was that, Laura, it was finally, it was something that was giving me, you know, so I was watching people be facilitated to find out the wisdom that was within them. And that was a really profound thing to witness. Like, I watched someone that, you know, Katie's facilitated someone, you know, for people who don't at all know what this thing is, the work. It's super simple. It's you know, we call it self-inquiry. It's inquiring of the self, you know, so the self has the answers. And there are four questions. And, you know, and then something that Katie calls the turnarounds, which, you know, I can explain. We can get into that in a little bit. But I just watched Katie ask this person these four questions. And really, you know, this woman, it was, you know, a nightmare situation that she had been living entire life as a result of what she experienced as a child. And you know, this Katie invited her to look at what was true. And it was an example of transcending the mind, you know, like this the mind is, you know, in the way of the intellect, like, you know, thinking of it as thought, you know, so the mind in that sense of the word. And when you see the true floor, it's I know you've, you know, had your experience in this as well, it's self-evident, you know, so it's not like someone's trying to convince you, it's someone saying this is the way it is, or this is how you should think of these things, this is how you should think of life, this is how you should look at it, or this is what's true, this is what's real. It's you doing that for you, and you see it, you know, and it, you know, as Katie says, it's given, the it being like, you know, reality, like just seeing it. And it's unmistakable when you go there, when you, you know, so that's, you know, so suffering brought me there, deep emotional, mental suffering, fear, terror, you know, real terror. Just feeling like life was way too much. You know, I wouldn't say that I was suicidal, but I fantasized about death. So that's, you know, just to give a sense of how much pain I was in. And for people who are sort of, you know, the question occurs to my mind, so it might to other people, like, what was causing that? It was, you know, and this is what we'll come to see, you know, when we look at doing the work today. But it was thoughts that were causing that, you know, so thoughts like, my daughter's going to die. It's my job to protect her, and I'm not able to, you know, it's my job and I can't, you know, it's like, okay, there is suffering immediately. And you know, thoughts like, I can't handle my life. Like, it's too hard. It's like, I can't do it. like, you know, deeply believing those things. Yeah, so that's, you know, that first part of the question, and if I remember right, your second part was, like, how it's, you know, how the work is relevant to parenting or useful or, you know, can be used in relation to parenting. Laura, like, the work has been everything to me in my life, and I think for most of the people who are drawn to listen to this call, my sense is, as with all of you, being a parent is central to my life, you know, meaning that, you know, being the best parent that I can be to my daughter, you know, and the ongoing, you know, inquiry and learning into what that might be, how that might look, you know, what that means. You know, that's my main drive really in life. Specifically, like, you know, well, still being general, so, you know, a bit more specifically how the work works in regards to parenting, it's, you know, these thoughts that we have, you know, so we can also say that the concepts we hold about what it means to be a parent and what it means to be a good parent, you know, and even what it means to be a bad parent and what our responsibilities are as parents. This is rich ground, you know, this is really fertile ground, meaning there's, we have so much loaded up in that. You know, I think it's on par with, if not more so, you know, our relationship with our mothers and fathers, you know, if we have a mother and father or did have, you know, if these concepts are huge, they're massive. So as a parent, you know, you know, if you're like me, and I suspect you are, it's like when we became parents, we were transformed. And, for, you know, I can only speak from my experience, what I'm saying specifically here about this transformation. When I became a parent, I went from me on my mind, you know, sort of this, like, what am I needing? What am I wanting? To a two, you know, from a one to a two, it's like, what is she needing? What does she want? And she's on my mind 24/7, you know, you know, my sense of myself in the world completely changed when I became a parent, and I suspect that that's the case with all of us, you know, and I can't know. So really every day, you know, and every moment of every day, we're, you know, confronted, is somehow for some reason the words coming to my mind, with, you know, thoughts about what it is to be a parent, whether we're with our child or not. And so certainly when we're with our children, you know, we're always making decisions, you know, from what food they eat to when they nap or go to bed, or whether, you know, they can watch TV or, you know, send them to school or not, or, you know, it's infinite and ongoing. And what I can say, Laura, just, you know, really generally is, in my experience, you know, most of us have grown up believing that to solve those problems, you know, if you want to call them problems or issues, or just, you know, to make those decisions, we've been taught to rely on the mind, you know, by which I mean the intellect. We've been taught to sort of analyze it. Mm-hmm. And that's painful most of the time in my experience. You know, logic has its place. But what, you know, maybe this journey of you know, maturing in life, for me anyway, Laura, like I can say that I more and more have come to see that I believed that there was a right and a wrong. I really thought, okay, this is the better way, you know, this is the right way. And what I've discovered, you know, for me, is that that's actually not something that exists. And it's like, what is true and honest for me? And the work is something that gives me those answers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's out beyond the field of right doing and wrongdoing, as Hafiz said, I think it was Hafiz, not Rumi. You know, it's what is right for me, you know, in my parenting. And the last little thing I'll say, Laura, before I, you know, let you kind of streamline this a little bit more into where you want it to go, is also what I've come to see more and more is that, you know, Krishnamurti said something about all life being relationship. And it took me a lot of years to understand experientially what he meant by that. And, you know, what I see is that we exist in relationship to other people. So another way of saying that is like, I find out who I am, like this Catherine Jeffries in this lifetime, this body mind, through the mirror of other people.
Mm.
So in regards to parenting, with our children, like they truly are, and I just got, you know, goosebumps down my arms. They truly are our teachers. You know, that's how I've experienced it. They're here to help wake us up. You know, it's another lens of parenting that I think is probably runs counter to the dominant, you know, sort of classic idea that the parents teach the children how to, you know, succeed on this thing we call planet Earth. You know, they take care of them and help them try to learn the rules and, you know, thrive, maybe even hopefully. But what I've really come to see, Laura, is that Bella wakes me up. It's not a conscious thing, obviously, but it's, she will call me out on everything because that's her job.
Mm-hmm.
And my job is to go inside, you know, it's to look, it's to really, if I don't want to suffer, you know, so I'll know, you know, so that's, it's like, if I think there's a problem with her, I know to do the work. Like if, you know, I have a thought like she's being rude, you know, she shouldn't be that way. I need to teach her to not be rude. You know, that's my job. Like what I noticed, Laura, is those are the concepts, you know, we can separate each of those out. And it's like, what I notice is that when I believe that, I feel off, I could say, in some way, I feel stressed of some kind, you know, it could be really strong or mild. And that's my temple bell. Like that's my key. Like that's my clue to do the work, because it's like, okay, if I'm feeling stress, I'm believing something, and you know, I'm going to inquire into what that is that I'm believing and see what's true.
Mm.
And in that way, I learn about myself and life. You know?
It's, you know, I feel like parenting is such a prime time for diving deeper, because so much comes up and all the expectations I find in my experience, all the expectations that I'm trying to live up to that I didn't even know that I held, you know, and they're all related to thoughts and beliefs, and it's exhausting. And it's like parenting allows us the gift of maxing out where our normal places of resource, like you're saying, our mind, so being able to analyze or come to solutions with our mind, or even emotionally all of that kind of gets maxed out with parenting. So this is why I think it is such a prime time for diving deeper, because those regular resources aren't as reliable anymore. And that's clear. Like, we see that and experience that. So where do you go? You know, where do you turn? And this is such a passion of mine to support myself in my own role as a mother, but also everybody else going through it and wanting to go through it consciously, whatever that means to them. It's just, you know, we all need that support. So, and I love what you said, Kath, that this, it leaves people, it turns people to their own wisdom. So it's self-inquiry, and that truth, you feel it. It's evident. It's I hear that. And so let's jump in. Can you describe to us the process? And then maybe what we'll do is give an example of you facilitating me, maybe through something fairly, maybe that seems fairly simple on the surface, just so people can gain these tools and see how they're used, and hopefully they can, you know, they can use them when you know, participants, when you find yourselves in those challenging moments where you're stressed out and you don't know how to, you know, how to deal in a situation. So my hope is that this will be helpful for you in those moments. So how does that sound, Kath, if we go through the process?
Yeah, perfect. Great. Okay, so yeah, so the four questions that I alluded to before, we apply these to a concept. So we know it's like one belief at a time. So Laura, for example, you know, and this is probably a great place to go. When we were talking before the call, you know, you offered up an option, you know, sort of this common thing, I think, that, like, I can't imagine any parent not having experienced this, but I think the way you phrased it was, like, the shame we feel after losing our cool.
Mm-hmm.
So let's, I'm going to, you know, it's always so helpful, I think, to be so specific and give examples, you know, it helps the mind instead of being abstract. So here's an example of that. And we can find one, you know, specifically in your life, and then I can facilitate you in that. But here, let me just briefly give an example so I can illustrate what these four questions are. So what I learned to do was, if you know, and here's what I would, you know, this is the process, so I would, you know, invite everyone to this. You know, look at the moment or the moments right before you lost your cool. And, you know, you might think, oh my God, I don't know, like, that was last week, that was last month, last year, I can't remember it. But you might be amazed what your mind recalls. So, you know, this is like, it requires, you know, some stillness. And it's like, okay, and for me, Laura, I always do the work with my eyes closed. You know, and I'll also offer up that, you know, Katie and Krishnamurti as well, who I reference a lot, he's been called spiritual teacher, among other things, but, you know, my dissertation and then subsequently my book really, you know, has him central, you know, as well as Katie's work. But they use the word meditation in a very specific way. And, like he did and Katie does. So, you know, the work as meditation, it's like sitting in silence. And so the first step of this meditation, it's like, what was I thinking and believing in that moment or moments right before I lost my cool?
Mm.
You know, and you're going to start to see, like, there were thoughts that were so stressful that you were believing in those moments. And it's like, you know, you had to lose your cool, given what you were thinking and believing. You know, it's like a chemical reaction. It's like a chain reaction, you know. So in there, you know, we find our innocence. You know, first of all, just offer that out. You know, given what you were thinking and believing, you had to lose your cool. You know, it's just, that's the pairing. It's like cause and effect. Mm-hmm. So the thought might have been like, and this is where it's, the stillness is required. It's like, he is disobeying me, you know, like thinking of your child, or they just ran out in the street and almost died, you know, and you know what, you know, whatever it is, there's things that you were thinking and believing, and there might have been and likely were several thoughts you were believing. So that's you know, the sort of step one. And in the work world, we use this one tool that captures all of that. It's a brilliant thing, and it's called the Judge Your Neighbor Worksheet. And it facilitates you through just by, you know, asking these questions. It's like you go to that moment, what were you feeling and why? You know, so it's like, I'm furious with Bella because, you know, she was rude to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the worksheet goes on from there, you know, asks, what were you wanting her to do? How did you want her to change? Question three is giving her advice, what should or shouldn't she have done in that moment instead of what she did do? And four is what you were needing, like what you were believing you were needing in that moment in order to feel okay. You know, mm-hmm. So you were needing her to do what? Like to think, say, feel, or do what? And often there's several things, Lauren, each of these categories. So it's amazing when we do sit there and look, you know, it's stilling, it's slowing the process down. It's like, oh, what was I wanting from her in that moment? Like your mind knows, it will give it to you. So it just requires mm-hmm. stillness. And also, Lauren, my experience, like it helps to have someone hold the space for you to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the work that I do this, you know, I facilitate people in this because you can self-facilitate, you know, in theory people do. And I don't find that easy. My mind really likes to be held by people. If there's someone there with me, it's like a world of difference. So,
mm-hmm.
So there's this tool asking you, you know, it's step one of the work, and you find out what was I thinking and believing that caused me to yell, mm-hmm. You know, or lose it in some way. And then more of the second part is these four questions. So question number one, and we would put it to the concept. So Bella was rude to me. Is it true? That's question number one. You know, and there's just a yes or no. And, you know, part of my work also as a facilitator is to hold people in the questions, meaning if they leave answering the questions and go into a story, mm-hmm. you know, that's my job to say, okay, I'm just fighting you back to answering the questions because, you know, I know right away when someone's left inquiry. Katie said mm-hmm. this thing, the work works when you work it.
mm-hmm.
And as soon as you leave answering the questions, you've left inquiry. So is it true? Bella's rude. Bella is rude, or Bella was rude in that moment. Can I absolutely know that it's true? Is question number two. Question number three, how do you react? What happens when you believe that thought? And you can see how this is meditation, Ayla. Like it's like sitting quietly, okay, looking. And it's like I time travel back to that moment. So it was last week or it was even, you know, 2 years ago. Okay, yes, I was at the bottom of the stairs in the kitchen. She was, you know, you hold yourself there. It's like, you know, how do I react? What happens when I believe she's being rude? And it's like, oh, you start to notice. You know, right? It's like my body temperature rises. I see images of me being treated badly by other people. Like there's this whole chain of events that happens in the mind. So mm-hmm. the work is slowing that down so you can really see it. You know, just get really clear on what's actually happening in the mind so we can be, you know, true like responders in life instead of reactors. So how do I react? What happens when I believe that thought? And then the final question, number four, is who would I be without that thought? Stella is rude. So I hold myself in the moment. The same thing just went down. You know, same words exchanged. Who would I be without the thought, Stella is rude? And then the turnarounds are always a little bit easier to explain by example, so I can do that when we get to you. But what that just means is it takes the original context and it turns it around to the opposite. And usually we can do this in three different ways. And it's something that, we call to the other, the self, and the opposite. So to the other, Bella's being rude, to me, is, you know, kind of what I left off on the end of that. But that's what's implied, right? That's what I mean. Bella's being rude to me. To turning around to the others, I'm being rude to Bella. And so this is a beautiful way to look at what the mind can't see in that moment, Laura, when it's holding only one concept. So it's like a prism always comes to mind, you know, these multiple angles of looking at something. So it's like, so I'm being rude, but okay, how is that as true or truer than my original concept that she's being rude to me? I am being rude to her. So it's like, you know, you're taking this big ball of yarn and you're unraveling it and you're finding out what really is the cause of my suffering. Is it that she's being rude, or is it what I'm thinking and believing about her? Causing my suffering. So I'm being rude to Bella, and then so that was the other. Turn around to the other. To turn around to the self is I'm being rude to me. And turning around to the self is always a brilliant thing to look at, because we really get to start to see, Laura, that our primary relationship in life is to ourself. And you know, this is a profound thing to start to see. I know I wasn't, you know, looking back. You know, it's like that was always the case for me, you know, aware of sort of this self that I am. And, you know, I guess I have. But it wasn't so conscious. You know, the work has made this really conscious for me. It's like, wow, like, you know, so I'm being rude to me. Like, how is that true in that moment? You know, and the suffering that causes about, you know, how I treat myself. You know, we so often look to our external world to make ourselves feel okay. And that's being in a prison, you know, because it's like, if I need anything outside me to be different than what it is, in any given moment, if I believe that I need something outside of me, then I am stuck. And this is the causes of all suffering in life. So it's believing that things aren't okay as they are, and that the way to change them and make them okay has to be external to you. It's that belief that causes suffering. So it's like, you know, we're really getting, like, the work is looking at whether or not that's true. You know, can I be the determiner of how I experience life, as opposed to trying to reach outside me and manipulate life to be different so that I can feel okay?
Gosh, it really is such a deep maturing. I mean, it's a deep willingness to, you know, get really sober and see things for what they are. Like, and mentally, I'm speaking of getting sober, so pulling out of all those mental games and waking up to reality. And it's, you know, it's terrifying, but it's such a step of maturity, I feel.
So well said, Laura. I really agree with you. I think this is actually what maturity is. And I also agree that it's terrifying. And the only thing more terrifying is living out our stressful thoughts and not having any way to question them, because I can tell you I've lived it and I still do sometimes. I still do. You know, it's like that's where our free will lies. It's like, do we, you know, are we believers? Like, are we just believing what we think, you know, or are we questioning it? It's like there's no middle ground. Kitty has said that, and I've really experienced that. Like, I'm either believing or I'm questioning. And I will still, you know, just, it's just interesting to watch my mind. I'm just, you know, believing something that's incredibly stressful for me, and I'm choosing to continue to believe it instead of questioning it. You know, and I just kind of watch that. It's like, okay.
Yeah,
I guess I just need to suffer more, you know, like Eckhart Tolle says. That we just haven't suffered enough. So then when we do, we're brought to our knees. And again, you know, and then it's like, okay, yeah, I'm going to question this because I think I'm a little tired of my suffering. Yeah, and Melissa, I'll just finish this last. I left the turnaround, but the last turnaround for those who are tracking it, you know, so it's to the other, the self, and the opposite. And the opposite would be Bella is not being rude to me.
Mm.
And, you know, and again, like we find at least three examples of how that is genuinely true for you. So for me. Mm. In that moment, how is that genuinely true? Like, what am I seeing there that she's actually not being rude to me? Like, how could that be as true or truer? Yeah, so we just, that's the unpacking of the ball of yarn. That's just this big knot and causes all this drama.
Hmm. Yes, and I know in my experience of doing the work, there is always a moment of just sort of this kind of staggering realization of how much effort I've exerted in things just because I've believed them to be true. Like maybe even years and years or even a whole lifetime of efforting because of beliefs that I've just never questioned. And
isn't that amazing?
Yeah. And that moment of like, oh my gosh. And like you just said, the scariest thing to just keep living, you know, to just keep living that way. And I get that. I mean, I can very easily see how we could live a whole life in that kind of effort, in trying to live up to those beliefs and expectations. And, you know, we're so conditioned to think that our mind and our thoughts are the key source of knowledge and information. And so to bring them into this inquiry, of course, the me inside that mind doesn't want to be looked at. But I love it. I love the work. I think this is such a powerful tool. And I think it would be very good for our listeners to hear you facilitate me, maybe even through this very example of feeling, you know, the shame that I can feel and the guilt and the berating and the self-berating that I can feel after I lose my cool. So after I yell at my kids, you know, and there's a huge emotional component to that. And I, like you said, I don't know a parent that hasn't gone through that.
Right. And Laura, that's actually, I'm going to clarify something because what you just said made me realize there's in this example of, you know, losing our cool, there's actually a couple of moments, you know, and using moments, a moment in time, you know, so specific time and location is helpful for doing the work. So there's actually a few here. And one, you know, one is what I've already referenced, which would be, what were you thinking and believing in those moments right before you lost your cool? So there's that moment. And then, you know, sort of what you were just saying, like that shame and it's kind of like, okay, in that, you know, there's that moment too. And you can do the work on both those moments. So
right.
So for example, like your thoughts that you're going to be having afterwards, you know, are different and they're gonna be probably mostly judgments towards the self.
Yeah.
So it's like, I am a terrible parent, you know. I just irreparably harmed my child.
Yeah.
You know, there's it's cascade. Like if you really sit and get still, like you'll have many, right? There's so many that the mind kicks out. So many thoughts. So So the reason, Laura, that that you know, I invite people to really look at the moment before they lost their cool is because, you know, this tool that we have called the Judge Your Neighbor Worksheet. It's so those are the moments you're judging your child.
Mm-hmm.
And you also might be judging yourself, and that would come out in doing inquiry. But it's helpful. I'm going to say it this way. When I first came to the work, I couldn't write a Judge Your Neighbor worksheet on someone because I was so full of self-criticism that I was really clear that other people weren't the problem, but I was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like I had all those thoughts, like I'm a terrible mother, I don't know what I'm doing, you know. But I really trusted Katie, who said when you do these self-judgments of the concept of a terrible mother, we're so close to it, you know, that in other words, we're not using the mirror of the other person, which is what I referenced a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what they're there for. We point at them, you know, point our finger at them. So it's just easier to, especially when you're new to the work, to really try to keep your, you know, use the judgments that you have towards other people, and I promise you, you have them.
Yes.
And it's good that you do. That's your mind's job, is to judge. You know, that is the nature of the mind. So this is the place to be non-spiritual as well, the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so those, the shame, you know, washing over you that you yelled at your child, I'm a terrible parent, we can question those thoughts as well. And that's my invitation is to hold off on that part of it. Is that clear?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Do you need to clarify anything around that? Okay.
Nope, that sounds great.
Okay, Laura, so yeah, so let's, are you ready to take a little look at this for you? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would invite you to is find a moment that's particularly stressful, you know, like let your mind just show you a time when you lost your cool with one or more of your children.
Mm-hmm.
What comes to mind? Is something...
So
maybe the most recent or the most painful.
Yeah, no, this is a recent one, and this is this week, actually, and all three kids. So for people listening, I have two, my twins are almost three, and my daughter just turned 5. So I've got all three of them jumping on my bed. And there's a headboard that I usually put pillows over so they don't bonk their head on it, but I hadn't. And so I come in the room, and they're really jumping on the bed and kind of pushing each other, and they're laughing, they're having a good time, and I'm asking them not to, and I asked them to stop jumping a few times, and they didn't hear, and then finally I just yelled at them.
Mm-hmm.
and then they stopped, and the look of shock on their faces, like it's not very often. Mm. I mean, of course, there's outbursts. But it's not very often that I yell at my kids,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And really like, you know, you guys stop jumping right now. And
yeah.
I mean, it seems so funny now, but it, you know, the look of shock on their face, like, whoa. Like, that was really big, Mom. Like, whoa. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Well, first of all, thank you for sharing that because, you know, my early years, I would say even that my, you know, in doing the work and coming to the work is really painful for me to open up and be vulnerable about what was going on, like what I was experiencing,
mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, when I was believing things like, other people, like other parents don't yell or they have it together and I don't, and we're not supposed to show this part of ourselves to the world. And,
yeah.
You know, so I just want to like acknowledge you for that. Like, yeah, that's so.
Thanks.
All right. So this was last week, Laura. I'm just going to get the time.
This is this week. On Tuesday, 2 days ago.
Yeah. Good. Okay. Good. So I just got a few details, Laura, to help hold you in that time and location. So, it was your bed?
Yeah.
Probably doesn't matter, but...
Yeah, it was our bed.
Your bed. Yeah. Okay. And what was it, morning, noon, or night?
It was morning. And so I was kind of running around trying to get all their stuff ready for swimming lessons. And I can definitely recall feeling busy, like just kind of feeling the busyness and sort of this, like a bit of stress of like, oh, how am I going to get this all done? And then having to run in, and then I see them all jumping, and I'm, I was already kind of frustrated coming into this scenario.
Yeah, perfect. Okay, good. So this is the start of it. You're starting to notice what already you were thinking in those moments. So we're going to take a closer look. So, Laura, what were you feeling towards your, and was it equal towards your three? Like, or what did you feel like, Olive, somehow's your oldest, did you have any more on her? Or was it just, and that's, it's fine either way?
No, I think it was, like, when I really sit with that cat and go back to that moment of coming in and standing here in the room and saying, asking them a few times to stop, and they were just giggling and having so much fun and completely ignoring me. And so it was really kind of directed, like the feeling came from all three of them, but there was a huge feeling of, oh my God, I have no control over my kids.
Yeah.
And a fear that they were going to get hurt.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay, good.
Because of that.
So I'm just going to note those down, just in a sec. So they might get hurt is a thought. And also, Laura, like the first one that you said, it's like, I don't have control. And it's really neat to look at, so it's like, okay, what's the belief like right away is like, and I don't know, but you will, as a mother, I should have control. As a parent, like a parent needs to be able to control their children. Children should be in control. It's like, right, it's like finding what's the belief. It's like, oh my God, like, what are you believing if things got out of control? Would we even recognize it when things are out of control? So beautiful, beautiful to start to look at this. So Laura, if I ask you, and I think you can tell me, but I know originally we planned this webinar for an hour, and so just, if you want to keep to that, then I'm going to just nail down one concept and we're going to just question that, as opposed to like normally I would facilitate someone to fill out a whole, I would write down every concept they had in that moment, and there's plenty. What are your thoughts about time?
Maybe we should just do one so they can see how it works all the way through with one. And then maybe at the very end, we can maybe give examples of what other concepts might have been that we could have looked at.
Okay, great. All right. So here's what I'm going to ask you to help. We could already deal with one of the concepts that we just named, but I'm going to actually just get you to facilitate or fill out statement number one, which this is what it is. So what were you feeling? So what was the emotion you were feeling in that moment towards your children, and why? And I want you to give me the why. You can give me as many as you want, three or four, but give them to me in short concepts.
Mm-hmm. I was mad at them for not listening to me.
Got it. Perfect.
Mad at them for not obeying me.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
I'm mad at my children because they weren't obeying me.
Yeah, and with that, yeah, it's like that. I was mad and also afraid. Like it struck a chord of fear of like, oh my gosh, when I tell them not to do something because it might hurt them, they don't even acknowledge me. So this fear of like, oh my God, like if something really big were to happen, would they even think to listen to me? Like sort of, so yeah, just this mm-hmm. this fear that mm-hmm. they don't acknowledge me.
Got it.
In that moment, of course.
Yes. And good to say that, actually. I want to just clarify something. We're really, you know, it's so sneaky. The mind's so sneaky, Laura. And you can watch it kind of like, I'll facilitate some of the work. And we are just dealing with this one situation, this one moment in time. And people, even as they're filling out the worksheet, will and I'll do it too, you know, start to say like, oh, but I know they're not always like that. You know, mm-hmm. I know that that's not true. And it's like, yes, but in that moment,
yeah,
the gold is to realize what you are believing. It's like we're not this, you know, it's like we're not trying to talk ourselves out of this. Like I could say, these thoughts come bearing gifts when we question them. You know, they're not here to punish us, and we're not questioning them to make us better people. It has nothing to do with that. It's, mm-hmm. you know, it's mm-hmm. like it's the spiritual is gone from all of
yes.
this. Yeah. So, okay, so yeah, what I wrote down for you then, you know, is I'm mad and afraid with my children because, and here's four concepts, aren't obeying me, they aren't listening to me, they aren't acknowledging me, and they might get hurt.
Yeah.
All right, so of those four, Laura, which feels like the one you want to question in this moment? You know, there might be one that stands out as a bit stingier or not, you know? So they weren't there, and I have it in the present tense,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it's like we travel back there. So they aren't obeying me, they aren't listening to me, they aren't acknowledging me, they might get hurt.
I think in that moment, when I bring myself back to that moment, I feel the most angry that they're not obeying me.
Good. Okay, good. Good to notice. Okay. Okay, well, so staying there, because I'm hearing that you're right there. You know, that's 2 days ago. It's morning. You're rushing around trying to get your stuff ready for this new lesson. And they're jumping on the bed, having fun, pushing each other. And you ask them to stop. So your children aren't obeying you in that moment, Laura. Is that true? And it's a yes or no.
Yes.
Your children aren't obeying you. Can you absolutely know that that's true? And again, it's a yes or no, and there's truly no right or wrong answer.
I don't know that.
Hmm. And Laura, where did you get that no? I'm just, you know, sometimes I ask people this. I'm just curious. What did you see?
Well, they might not have heard me.
Hmm. Okay. So you can't absolutely know that it's true.
Mm-hmm.
And Laura, how do you react? What happens when you believe that thought? They're not obeying me.
Mm. Oh, I get so frustrated with them, and I try to be really dominating and exert more control and questioning my abilities as a mother to keep my kids safe.
What happens in your body? What physical sensations arise when you believe the thought they aren't obeying me?
I think when I'm in that state of fear and anger, it's almost like I'm not in my body anymore. I'm way gone.
And can you feel any of the frustration in your body? Where do you feel that, if anywhere?
Tightness in my chest and throat.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And just constricted, like there's not enough oxygen in the room, and I just feel something really constricting around me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And also feeling that sensation starting to rise of like, oh my gosh, I'm going to blow. Oh my gosh, I'm going to blow.
So there's a lot of sub-questions, Laura, that I sometimes ask people to help draw out how you react and what happens when you're believing a particular thought, and I'm not going to ask them today. I'm going to just keep this really simple, you know, keep it to the four questions. And also in the interest of time. So staying in that moment, you know, you've asked them to stop, that you're watching them not stop. Who would you be in that moment without the thought, my kids aren't obeying me?
It just wouldn't have bothered me in the same way. Like, I can almost imagine if I didn't have that thought, maybe I would just... Maybe I would have assumed something different and gotten right on the bed with them and tackled them or something to make them stop. You know, I wouldn't have been stuck in this place of anger and fear.
Yeah, so without the thought, you can tell me how you feel. Like, how are you feeling in your body? What else are you seeing, if anything? Watching them. You don't have the thought, they're not getting me.
I mean, without that thought, there just wouldn't be any reaction at all. Like just sort of coming into a room open and seeing what's going on and not minding that they didn't hear me. And maybe still being in action, but not being so caught.
So let's turn it around more. So my children aren't obeying me. So you know, why don't you start with the self? So what would the turnaround to yourself be? So instead of in place of the children, you put self, like I.
So I'm not obeying me.
Yeah, so what, just let that land, you know, so how is that true for you in that situation, that moment? You're not obeying you. What are you telling you that you weren't listening to?
I mean, it's so clear to me that I wasn't obeying myself because I was allowing myself to get caught in this drama.
And specifically, Laura, like what, when you say you weren't obeying yourself, what was it you were telling you?
What was I telling myself in that moment?
Yeah, like what did you just see?
I mean, I can really see coming in and noticing, okay, there's these thoughts and emotions of feeling frustrated and angry and afraid. And I can choose to either take action from that or just come back to being open and seeing.
So you had that awareness in that moment and you didn't listen to you.
Yeah, I chose to go into the drama. I chose to enact the story.
Yeah. I can really very much. Yeah, amazing to see. Okay, so Laura, let's see if you can find another example of how you weren't obeying you in that moment. Let's see. Like, I won't find all three because of time, but you know, I just came to me to ask you if you can see another one. By all three, I mean, you know, often we find at least three examples that really helps unlock the mind. So three examples of each turnaround. So you aren't obeying you.
I think there was a deeper, there could have been an ability to just come in and join them, even join them, jump in for a minute. Like just taking a different path, but instead I was already kind of in a mood, or already kind of feeling frustrated, so I just chose to let that be my vent.
Right. So specifically, the instruction came from you, like to join them. It was very fleeting that it came. Did I hear that right?
Yeah, like a suggestion that I wasn't willing to take. My mind didn't want to take that one, but the suggestion, look how much fun they're having, you can just go and join them. Like that just hit my heart.
So I just want to, gives me space to that. You know, Laura, like that's a really profound thing. It's like noticing that you gave, and that's maybe a discussion for our next webinar, this idea of the I and the you, you know, the me. But you, something in you gave you this image of you jumping on the bed with them. You know, it's like it just this fleeting little, like, you know, and you're seeing that now. And, yeah, it's amazing to me. How Katie will say, you know, talk about life living us, you know. And I think every spiritual teacher I've ever encountered, you know, it's like, and that's how I understand it. Yeah. Those things, it's like, oh, do this, you know. Get on the bed, you know. Go brush your teeth. You know, it's like it's these little, yeah.
Yeah, and I can just so clearly in this conversation see how, because I was believing that I had to be the mom that was getting everything ready and trying to protect them, that I had to take a particular stance.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I would say, you know, as a humanity and certainly as a culture, like, we would share those beliefs that you were believing in that moment. Yeah, and that's what the work is. It's like we get to check it out with ourselves. Finally, after all these years, right?
Yeah.
Being told implicitly or explicitly, this is what a good parent does. It's like, I'm going to ask myself, is it true for me that being a good parent in this moment means getting them to the swimming lessons on time?
Yeah.
You get to ask you.
And I do. So I did think of a third way.
Go ahead. Yeah.
It was almost like by yelling, I was choosing to indulge in my anger.
And say more about that as a turnaround. Like, was that, you know, for I'm not obeying me?
And I'm making that into a turnaround?
Oh, so when you said a third way, was that like it was a third example for that turnaround of?
Yes, that I wasn't obeying myself.
Okay, and tell me how, just paint it for me so I can track
you. Yeah, so I can feel this anger arising in me. And there's a huge knowing in my heart of, you know, by yelling at them, by allowing this explosion to happen, it's for me. Like that's indulging like something in me, some relief,
yeah.
stress or frustration, and it's not the deepest way to address the situation.
Right.
And so I heard that. I felt that. I knew that, but I yelled anyway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know. I feel like probably everyone listening, certainly I can deeply relate to exactly that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to bang you. Okay. So let's do another turnaround. So to the other, and then we'll do to the opposite at the end. So what would to the other be? So swap where you and your children are in a sentence. My children aren't obeying me.
So I'm not obeying my children.
Yeah, so that's an interesting one. So what comes up there? What do you see? What's an example of how that's true for you?
Oh, well, it's so clear, just in light of what we just talked about. They were really just in play, in a total place of play, and there was an invitation for me to join that because it was happening. And I wouldn't go with it.
Give me another example. You're not obeying your children in that moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this is maybe kind of the same thing, but that's what they wanted to do. Like, they were all clearly having so much fun, and they weren't hurting themselves, actually.
Yeah, I didn't notice.
So what they wanted to do was jump on the bed and have a laugh together. I didn't want them to do that anymore.
Ah, beautiful. When I hear that land, because I'm right in here relating to you, you know, I'm right doing my work with you, and that lands in me a huge relief.
Is that
the truth will set you free? Like, do you feel that way?
This sense of
maybe for people listening, like, who haven't done the work, you know, they might not, that might sound surprising, you know, because to sort of see that and say it out loud, like, without doing the full process, like the four questions and then the turnaround, the turnaround could feel like a knife in the gut, you know, it's like, that's what they wanted, and I wanted something else, and I went with that, you know, it's like, oh, it's such a relief to see it, yeah, you know, it's like, oh, it's beautiful to see that,
yeah, totally,
so beautiful, the truth, yeah, amazing, okay, so, well, did you want to find a third example?
Your children. I mean, I think maybe it's a slightly different word, but I wasn't respecting them. By how I treated them. In a way that's not obeying the conduct in the house.
Mhm. Yeah. Yeah, I like that, and I can see why your mind took you there. You know, like, I'm not obeying them. It's like there's a sense of a relationship between those words, obey and respect. Like, there's, you know, mm-hmm. I can find that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so good to notice, right? So good.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third and final, well, not, you know, sometimes there's, and I can explain that maybe in the next webinar, but, yeah, that can sort of sometimes be more than three main turnarounds. But what do you see for the opposite there? So they aren't obeying you. What's the opposite of aren't?
So they are obeying.
Yeah, now that's interesting. So what do you see there? How could it be true that in their continuing to jump, they are obeying you?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think on a deep level, I want them to be happy and enjoy and enjoy. That's all I want.
Yeah.
And connecting with each other and having fun and having fun and. So, in that regard, they're totally obeying me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally. That's exactly the one that came to my mind as well.
Mm-hmm.
See if you can find one more. They are obeying you.
I mean, I think it just comes up again that there's a very real potential that they couldn't hear me.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So it wasn't that they were disobeying me. They really honestly didn't hear the call at all.
Yeah, and that's amazing to see. It's like, actually, when I really look, I can't absolutely know for sure they heard me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they were so
engaged. Yeah, and that's actually another way to turn it around, too, while we bring that up. While you mentioned that, it's they aren't disobeying me. It's like another way to turn it to the opposite. Mm-hmm. So they are obeying me or they aren't disobeying. You know, you find the opposite to that word, obeying.
Mm-hmm.
They aren't disobeying me. Yeah, they can't if they didn't hear you. And well, I had one come to mind. Did you want to hear it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This just moves me so deeply, but it, you know, what I saw was like, you know how I said before about these people being teachers in their lives, and so far in my life, I've experienced my daughter being, you know, one of my biggest teachers. And it's like that turnaround lands with me, you know, so they are obeying me. It's almost like they're gonna hold to their integrity. And hold to yours, you know, because that's what they're here to do. It's like, you know, they're not going to just, you know, they're obeying something so much deeper and wiser and bigger that is in alignment with, you know, who you really are in your essence, you know. It's I don't know if I feel like I'm in a little bit foggy here in articulating this. It's like they are obeying me. It's like it's really kind of similar to what you were saying. Like in the deepest part of you, there's nothing you want more than for your children to be happy and thrive. You know, it's related to that turnaround. Yeah, and it's like it's a little bit different in the sense that like there's the additional part is like you know, they're here to wake you up, and they're not here to obey you in terms of your instructions to them. They're here to get you to align with your deepest truth, you know, and they're obeying in you.
Yes. Totally.
I don't know whether to just break down crying and awe at that, you know, it just takes so much emotion that moves through me around that.
I know, it is very moving, Kath. I mean, just the willingness right now to do the work with you and see what a beautiful scene it actually was.
Yeah.
But I was trying so hard to control and stop.
Yeah, which you had to, given what you were thinking, believing.
Right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
That's so powerful.
Yeah, and that's what I love about the work is we get to, you know, we actually do get to live our lives over in that sense. You can go back to as many stressful moments as there are, as you want, right? And see it in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yes,
and going back to your childhood and, yeah. yeah, these things that we, you know, we kind of call our lives, and this is what, you know, happened to me, and this is who I am, and, you know, it's like all open for questioning, and as you experience, Laura, like, you know, I say it's open for questioning, you know, and answering, you know, the answers rise up to meet those questions as you just, you know, we all got to experience through you, right? That knowing that you just, you know, I think everyone listening could hear the clear knowing coming out of what you were seeing
mm-hmm.
and describing. It's like, right? It's just that it's unmistakable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So thank you for that. Like, that's, I experienced you really, you know, just really going in there. Like, you really looked.
Oh, it is. It's so profound, Kath, and to be able to have that different perspective is such a gift.
Isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. It's the loosening of the hold, these tight holds we have in what we're so sure is true. You know, and that's very scary for the mind until it comes to trust that you're giving it a home.
You
know, mm-hmm. kind of the way Katie says it, like, you know, giving the mind a home, which, you know, is just profound, really. It's like, it's no wonder, right, that our minds sort of dart this way and that, especially around parenting, you know, 24/7. It's like, well, you know, this way or this way. Did I do enough of this? Did I do too much of that? Like, is it, you know... Because we don't, like you said it so well, I can't remember the exact words you used, but how we've really been trained to look at, like, you know, our logical mind as the holder of the answers, and it's
mm-hmm.
just not so. So the mind, you know, is trying its best. You know, I write about this, an experience of this in my book, you know, a direct experience of my mind, and it came to me as this little schoolboy, and I, you know, I handed it the equation MC equals MC squared and asked him to solve it. And it was so clear to me that I was asking my mind, represented by this little boy, to do something it was never capable or born to do, never capable of doing, and couldn't, it was not its job to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But this little boy dutifully went back to his desk and worked as hard as he could on trying to solve this problem. You know, B equals MC squared, and that's what the mind does. It's like, I'm gonna like keep you up at night trying to resolve this problem, and it cannot. But we can.
Mm-hmm.
We aren't, you know, the mind, and that's a concept until you experience it directly. You know, you as in all of us, like until we experience that directly, right? If I say something like, you know, we are in our mind, it's like, and you know, I invite us to test that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so beautiful, Kath, and it's really, I just love how practical it is on these very, very poignant emotions that can come up in those moments when we're parenting, when we see that we're trying to exert control, and to notice the stress
that brings.
And to kind of make a tiny mm-hmm. note, this would be a good place to inquire. If not now,
very soon.
Very soon.
And again, Laura, it's like, and, you know, it's not necessary except if we don't want to suffer anymore.
Right.
So it's like, you know, it's like it doesn't make us a better person. You know, but... Yeah, like we don't need to, you know, it's like we don't need to inquire. And because for me, I find, you know, I think I'm noticing I'm saying that because one of my deeply held beliefs in this lifetime apparently is that, you know, I'm not good enough as I am. Mm-hmm. And believing that has led to like a lot of pain. You know, so... And it was really that belief was what fueled, you know, my 10 years of psychotherapy and all of my self-help books and all of the courses I took and, you know, And that's all fine, and that's all served a purpose I've come to see in my own understanding of the mind. It's all been beautifully orchestrated, you know, in that mm-hmm. sense of what I needed by seeing what I didn't need, you know. And I can go into that in a further webinar maybe if people want, but you know, and that includes my PhD in there. You know, in other words, it was a process I had to kind of undertake to see its limits. You know, if that kind of makes sense. But yeah, just so, you know, but the work finally for me, Laura, was, oh, and I can just feel that, you know, I can feel it within my heart when I'm about to, it's like the work finally was this thing that allowed me to first notice that I was believing that thought, you know, I'm not good enough, and question that. So it's like, you know, so in other words, it wasn't one more thing that I experienced. It's like, oh, I'm not good enough, so I need to do this. And finally, the work was the thing that was like, well, can we question that thought that you're actually not good enough as you are? So, yeah, so when, you know, like you just pointed out, it's like in the moments we yell at our children, yeah, it's like, it is, you know, if you have the tool of the work, you know, and in my own experience, my self-awareness is, you know, I would say it's deepened. So in other words, I would have, you know, if I'm feeling stressed, I tend to, and not always, but I'll tend to now, you know, have the thought come in saying, what are you thinking and believing? Mm-hmm. It just kind of comes in mm-hmm. now. You know, and what I just want to say is to, you know, try to sum this up, what I'm saying right now, make it a bit clear. It's like, that doesn't make me a better person in my experience, Laura. It's like, it helps me to suffer less.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't have anything to say about, you know, better and worse anymore. You know, I just see us all as trying to do our best, and we do. You know, I've seen that nothing else is possible, actually. Everyone's mm-hmm. always doing their best given what they're thinking and believing. So yeah, so it's like, okay, at any point, it's always available, you know, this tool of inquiring into what's true, and it's not too late, and, you know, none of that. And if you're believing that one, we can question it. You know, it's like, oh, I've wrecked my life, or... My kids are grown, you know, or something. It's like, oh, it's too late, and it's like, let's look at that. Let's inquire into that. Because that's suffering, you know?
Yeah, and I think I've really come to trust inquiry that the mind might say, oh, my gosh, I'm stuck. I don't know what to do with this. And it's up against a wall, a mental wall. And I've learned to trust inquiry. That something deeper will be revealed.
And Laura, when you say you're stuck, you're up against a wall, what's that in like relation to? Just to understand, like in terms of your consciousness development, or in terms of trying to understand the situation with your children, or what, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, maybe trying to understand why I act the way I do.
Okay.
Like how, you know, sometimes when I see myself being reactive.
Yeah.
And then saying, oh, I just can't figure this out with my mind. Like I've gone as far as I can. And that's how I come so deeply to inquiry and come inquiry to help me see something, some undercurrent that's going on.
Yeah, right. Yes. Yeah.
Well, Kath, thank you so much. I'm just looking at our time and thinking we should probably wrap this up.
Yes. Sure.
But I think this has been such a helpful conversation for me and hopefully for people listening. And I wanted to put it out there that Catherine and I are both available for coaching and counseling. And I'll leave the link to Kath's website below this recording. And I just want to thank you again so much, Kath, for coming and joining us today and offering this transformative work.
Well, you know, it really feels like a blessing for me to be able to do it. So, you know, you're welcome and thank you for setting it up, Laura. And, you know, maybe we can do more, you know, maybe we can see what the response is from all of you. And, you know, if, and no questions, clarifications, people are wanting to, you know, there's so much richness here, as I was saying, in our relationships with our children. And even today, Laura, like, I loved where this went, you know, like you and I just have a nice, you know, we were just open and we're like, let's see where this goes. And I love where it went. And I feel like there's also so much, it was like this little drop, you know, there's so much, there's so many other places it could also go and so much else that we could also sort of say and inquire into. So we'll leave it there and I'll look forward to next time.
Well, thank you so much. And you were cutting out a little bit there, Kat, but I was just thinking that if people did have specific questions to ask us, maybe they could post them on my Facebook page.
Sounds great.
And if you keep your eye on there, and I'll tag you into any questions that if people want to have any, you know, help with doing a turnaround or seeing something in a different way.
Beautiful. Perfect. That's a great idea. I'd be happy to do that.
Okay, great. And thank you to everybody listening. We really appreciate your presence and support.
Yes.
And hopefully we'll be in touch with everybody again soon.
Yes, I would love that. Thank you, everybody. Bye for now.
Thank you. Bye for now.
Bye for now.